Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's the moment of the evening every K-State fan enjoys. Settle down and pour a whiskey, crack open a LaCroix. Please put your hands together and make a little noise for your favorite Wildcatters, the handsome Bosco boys.
Ooh, Bosco's boys.
Come on, boys.
The boys are back, and we are coming to you from the Topeka MyBookie.ag studio. Remember, MyBookie.ag, they're the presenting sponsors of Bosco's Boys and the entire Armchair Media Network. Use promo code capital C, capital H, capital A, capital I, capital R, that is all caps, chair, for your 100% deposit match up to $1,000. And I tell you what, if you have been betting on the Cats, you have a ton of money right now. With, you know, no more hesitation, I really want to talk about this game. Sadly, Grant is out saving lives. So that means my favorite backup co-host and now four-time recurring guest, my father, Kevin, is coming on to the pod. Dad, this is a lot better than the West Virginia review you and I did last year. Are you ready to get into this?
I am. It's great to be back with you. And as you stated, this is a much better post-game review to do than it was that West Virginia one. That was some tough sledding.
Yes, that was bad. And I sprung this on you at my cousin's wedding, which I need to give a couple shout-outs. First out, off to the best man. I'm not going to dox my cousin or the best man, but best man gave a speech, gave a shout out to Bosco's boys because he's a bonehead. He's a patron, and I got to chat with him and his father and his wonderful wife, all great boneheads. And my cousin gave the pod a shout out, apologizing because I couldn't be at that Mississippi State game. I told him afterwards, I said, anytime K-State needs a big win, you have to renew your vows. So he got a good chuckle out of that. It was a beautiful wedding. While I would have loved to be in Stillwater, there's no place I would have rather be than celebrating love on a beautiful fall evening in Kansas City. So before we get into it, people know we record these review pods early in the morning, so it's not beer of the pod, coffee of the pod. You whip me up a good iced coffee. I have no idea what beans these are, but it's super good quality.
Yeah, this is a special Sunday version. We usually have this coffee on Sunday mornings. This is a Starbucks mocha bean.
Well, it's delicious and it's great as my iced coffee, as everyone knows. Until it gets a little bit cooler, I'm almost exclusively iced or cold brew coffee. But let's stop beating around the bush. The folks, while they love coffee of the pod, they love hearing about wedding and love and all that jazz. It's about the Cats. 31 to the number 23 ranked Mississippi Bulldogs, 24, massive win. Overall, just a solid performance. There were a lot of mistakes that were in there. One of the big first pivotal moments that I want to quickly chat about is that very first drive. We are moving the ball like crazy, get into the red zone, miss the first down by just 1 yard. They decided to go for it. So before the play was run, which ultimately was stuffed at the line, were you wanting to take the 3 points early, or were you liking where Kleiman's head was at early, being super aggressive on offense?
Well, you know, it's kind of one of those decisions you make early in a game where it's like, boy, if you make it, that was a great decision. It was, I think, a confidence decision on Coach Kleiman and the staff to go ahead and go for it. I think it was, we have confidence in our offense, our line, our running game, we can pick up that 1 yard gain. Of course, when we were stuffed, I was like, should have kicked the field goal. It was, it would have been what, maybe a 30 yard field goal for Lynch, certainly within his wheelhouse. I think we would have converted that. And really, when we were stuffed, I was like, we're gonna miss those points.
Yeah, it definitely came back to bite us. Well, I guess it didn't come back to bite us, but it did prevent us from maybe getting a little bit more of the momentum earlier. But the defense continued to play real well. We won't talk about everything at this point. We'll talk about stuff in the positional performance. But eventually we get up 17-7. We get a field goal. We get two good touchdowns. The second one coming late in the first half. I'm thinking, all right, we're going to go up 17-7 with, you know, the ball getting out of the half. So before we get into the penalty and eventual long touchdown, they decided to bring in McCrane for the pooch kick, which it worked out once very well versus, our friends, the Bowling Green Falcons. It did not work out real well. He only got to about the 30. They returned it up to about the 35-40. When you have guys like Zentner and Ankdal who can put it out of the back of the end zone, especially late in a half, why are you pooching that?
Well, I would agree, but I think what happened was they just fell in love with that Bowling Green pooch kick because that resulted in a turnover, I believe, by Landry.
Yes, Landry Weber got onto that ball.
And I think they thought this was going to surprise them and possibly maybe result in a quick turnover right before the half. But I agree 100%. And from that point on, I was like, kick it away. Let's put it in the end zone. Make them go the full field.
Yep. And then everyone knows what happened next. We'll talk about Mr. Jones, as I like to call him, Wayne Jones. We'll talk about that when we talk about the secondary. But the penalty happens, which was an absolute killer. That would have ended the half. Tons of momentum. But then they end up getting the opportunity to take some shots downfield. And they end up scoring that touchdown. First off, before we go from that, you and I talked on the phone during halftime. I was a little surprised they didn't at least review that. I think it probably was a catch, but is it just me or is college football almost erring on the side of cutting down on the reviews this year?
Well, I was a little unclear about the rule of possession in the end zone in college versus the pros. When I saw the first review, there was really only one that you could see the ball side of that reception when he hit the turf. It looked to me like the nose of the ball moved when he hit the turf. So I didn't know if they called it a possession when he established possession in the end zone. That created the automatic touchdown. It was a heck of a throw. It was a really good catch as well, but it seemed to me like it was pretty close to being incomplete.
Yeah, I think that was the best passing catch by Mississippi State the entire game. I would have reviewed it as well. I also think I would have reviewed the A.J. Parker fumble later in the game. So that's kind of why I said I'm a little surprised they must have gotten some initiative to speed the game up and not review as much. So I was a little surprised on both of those.
Well, on the Parker fumble, it seemed to me there was no angles except for the initial television angle. I couldn't see anything on that.
Yeah, but, you know, it worked out for the best, so I'm not going to cry over spilt milk. So we saw momentum. We had massive momentum shifts in that game, not only with, you know, that penalty and long touchdown, but with the turnovers. What is it about this team that allowed them to bounce back from these massive, quick momentum shifts? Because it's probably been since 2011 or maybe even 2012 where we've seen a team be able to come back from adversity. Too often over the last few years, the second that counterpunch comes from the other team, I feel like we've just kind of packed it up and kind of rolled over. So what is it that you saw yesterday that, you know, led to being able to fight back from those?
Well, I'm not sure where it came from specifically. I have my theories, but I haven't seen K-State come back from that kind of adversity for years, maybe since the first era of Bill Snyder. Maybe the team could respond and survive one bit of adversity, but the multiple mistakes, penalties, the heat, on the road, cowbell. I don't need to hear any more cowbell, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm done with cowbell for a while.
But here's what I think is going on here. I think you've got a coaching staff and the head man, Coach Kleiman, that has instilled a huge amount of confidence in the team and also a huge amount of faith and belief across the board that he believes in them and there isn't anything that they can't overcome, and he's got their back.
Yeah, and it's crazy how quickly that culture has changed, because we've seen, you know, over our lives as football fans, not necessarily at K-State, although you could say at K-State, but just nationwide, how long it usually takes a coaching staff to truly insert their culture into a team. Usually it takes, you know, wholesale transfers and a couple of recruiting classes. But, I mean, Isaiah Zuber was the only high-profile transfer out, and then he had to scramble and get a recruiting class. So it's not like he has a bunch of quote-unquote his guys. So seeing these guys buy in that and just truly love Coach Klieman, he loves them back, it's refreshing to see, because again, you just don't see that in college sports after a coaching change that quickly.
I think there's something special there, and that might be the biggest positive, the biggest change that this coaching staff brings to this team, is that relationship building, the belief. And I think we've also have a team, and especially the holdovers that were there during this last year in the Snyder era, were hungry and thirsty for that kind of belief and that kind of environment and culture.
I agree with you. Some quick bullet points before we start diving into position by position. That was the first time in 19 games Mississippi State has surrendered more than 30 points. So that's a nice little feather in the cap of the K-State offense and special teams. That's K-State's first road Power 5 non-conference win since 2011. And it's the first Power 5 non-conference win since 2012, both of those coming against Miami. Chris Klieman has now extended his personal winning streak to 24 games. This was the most penalties we have incurred in the Klieman era, with 7 penalties, 59 yards, some not great stuff, 4 fumbles, 3 of them lost, 2 of them were on those muff punts. And now, as we talked about, we finally were able to see the first bit of adversity that this team has faced. And I think we all say that they passed that test with flying colors.
Yes, you know, this is a game early in a season that really pulls the covers back on your team. You are exposed as to who you are. And a lot of that is, how are you going to respond to some adversity? If we played, you know, a team that we were far superior in all aspects of the comparison, you know, we maybe don't have to be exposed to that kind of adversity, but that was clearly going to be the difference. You know, it was so darn hot. You have the cowbells. It's an SEC team on the road. It's a ranked team. No one really expected us. The pundits, anyway, did not expect us to win that game. So I think the biggest test, that being adversity, we knew we were going to have it. Didn't know. I certainly anticipated that we would be behind during that game, and how we responded to that as well. Very, very big positives in that aspect.
Speaking of big positives, Skylar Thompson, another great game, as truly being that leader, that field general. Again, his stats are never going to blow folks away just based on the offense this year, but he was able to be efficient, 10 for 18, 123 yards, a touchdown, which ended up being the game-winning touchdown throw, no interceptions. He had 3 big carries, 2 kind of one was like a scramble, one was a designed run, one was the touchdown run. He only ended up with 8 yards because that sack and fumble is credited as negative rushing yards to Skyler, so it shows only 8 yards rushing, but he still was able to show us that when he needs to run, he's able to. He had great distribution of the ball, because in his throws, he found 6 different wide receivers. And the only other, you know, talking point from that is that injury scare right at the end of the first half. Mm-hmm. Nick Ost had to take the snap that was the kneel down to end the half. John Kurtz, friend of the show, said that he thought it was a dislocated thumb. When that was brought up in the post-game press conference, Chris Klieman was like, no, not dislocated thumb. He was cramping. I think he's kind of defending his player, kind of putting up a smoke shield surrounding what could have been a real injury. Because I trust John. He was down there. He saw the thumb. But what was it? What did you see from Skyler that, A, most impressed you, and B, what is it about him that when the team's backing him, he just finds a way to win?
He does. And I think, you know, one thing, we don't see every aspect of it, but we all believe it and we've seen it and he's shown it, is he's a tremendous leader. All of his team has faith in him and belief in him. From a tactical standpoint, one thing I see, and even the national broadcasters mentioned this, he gets in and out of plays. He audibles at the line, and it may be a run game, a run play. He may be checking from a pass play into a run play based upon what he sees, and it always seems like he's making really good decisions out there.
It almost makes you think that if in the previous offense, if he was allowed to be calling the audibles instead of the check with the sideline two or three times, and he was able to just call what he saw, that he might have flourished even more in that offense. And I know some folks kind of get frustrated with me specifically bringing up, you know, the last couple of years of the Snyder era, and some folks get mad at some other media members for talking about how Skylar Thompson was just jerked around all last season. But I don't think you can watch how the first three games have gone, his poise at the line, checking in and out of these plays that end up for big plays. Mm-hmm. I mean, the one they specifically talked about, he audibled into a play, and it was either Jordan Brown or Gilbert. I can't remember one. They ended up picking up 12 yards, and they mm-hmm. could see where the audible was coming from. Yeah. I just think that this is one of the most intelligent quarterbacks we've had at K-State. Mm-hmm. And just an absolute gamer who refuses to lose.
Well, he shows his quarterback IQ every game, and I think I think we don't even realize maybe how great that is. His intelligence on the field may be the best we've ever had. You know, he sees where the blitzes are likely to come, and then can check. Also protection when it's going to be a pass play. You can see where he shifts the back, you know, from his left to his right, or bringing a tight end into protection mode as a fullback. It just seems to work, and he really sees the field and what's coming at him very, very well.
And he's also able to stand in there, and he takes a hit and he tries to get the throws off. He did have the one fumble, which I don't know if that might have been the one downside. He didn't see the free safety coming up, blitzing from the blind side. But there are two plays that I think of specifically where he stood in there and he knew a hit was going to come and he tried to make a play. The first one was on a play action pass where he just missed Gannon. Just threw it a little too far. That would have been a touchdown.
Yeah, that was a touchdown.
But he stood in there. He knew he was going to get hit. He ended up drawing the late hit 15-yard penalty anyways. Then the other one was when he was scrambling to his left, throws it to Schoen. Was it Weber? I'm not sure. It was on a third down and 14.
I don't think it was the Weber catch, because Weber only had one.
So I think it might have been a Schoen catch. Yeah. But then he got just blasted on his throwing arm, but he was able to make the throw and pick it up. And the guy just has poise in the pocket, and he knows when he needs to get rid of the ball. And to his credit, like on a few of his incompletions, he was rolling out, and he just got rid of it because mm-hmm. he knew that was a smart play. He's mm-hmm. just the quarterback we need for this offense, and I think just the sky's the limit with him. Sorry for the bad pun, but I just enjoy watching that kid play.
I do too. I think he's really having a great time. I think he's really enjoying his playing time this year, and fully accepted his leadership role and being a captain.
Yep, definitely. So we'll move on to the offensive line. Only surrendered that one sack. Five tackles for loss, but none of them were real devastating. Maybe a one-yard loss here, one-yard loss there. It seemed like they had great protection for the most part all day when Skylar was going back. Commanded the first half, just imposed the running game very well. Adam Holtorf, who I think K-State social media needs to start backing for the Remington Trophy. I mean, he's pulling, like, I mean, you don't see collegiate centers who are able to get the snap off and pull like that. That, as someone who played center in high school, that's like offensive line porn, the way he's able to do that.
It is. It's really impressive. And the ESPN crew picked up on that as well. And they showed not just Holtorf, but the entire line, and how they have a whole package of running plays where they are pulling to the strength and then allowing the running back time to see, you know, where's the hole, where's the opening, and where's the crease, so we can maximize every running play that we have when we run like that, and the guards, tackles, and center are pulling like that.
Yep, all the interior of the offensive line, they're all getting in and out of their poles really well. That was the biggest thing I was concerned about, because there was not very much pulling last year. It was almost pure zone scheme. So I was worried, because, you know, that's a whole different type of blocking concept. Zones, it's like, all right, hey, you know it's left or right, and you know you have, you know, either head up to gap. For pull, you're like, you're turning around, you're trying to find the first hat, and you're mm-hmm. trying to seal the block. So that's a massive change. The layman football fan probably doesn't understand, and they've taken to it like fish to water. Another massive play for the offensive line, and I know you had this in your notes, Mr. Nick Kaltmeyer, he pounced on that ball. It was the third and long that Skyler got hit on. If he doesn't recover that, and Ankle ended up flipping field position, if he doesn't jump on that, this might be a very different podcast.
Well, I think so, because that was a critical juncture where it was a blitz. It was a blindside blitz, and I believe it was a safety blitz.
Yep, safety
who
blitz.
Came inside.
Yes.
He came inside, and it was not picked up, and Skyler had no way to know it was coming unless his spidey sense was heightened at that moment. He couldn't have seen it coming and just blasted him in the back. The ball goes tumbling down, and Kaltmeyer sees it and pounces right on it, saves it, because that would have been a huge momentum change. The whole field position would have been flipped. That was a big, big play.
Yep, I agree with you. Last thing I want to chat about before we move on from the offensive line. Mississippi State is probably the only front we are going to see all year that was recruited to go head-to-head in the trenches. I mean, if you look at the weight across the not only the defensive line, but also the linebackers, it mimics like an NFL size. Mm-hmm. The talent definitely isn't there, and they lost, you know, some first-round draft picks from that front seven from last year. But they are built to try to stop the run. They are built to basically go head-to-head with you and say, we are bigger, badder, and stronger. You're not going to run on us. And we did. How excited are you to now be getting into Big 12 play, to be going up against some of these defenses where the defensive line, they're built to be conditioned because it's going no huddle. Linebackers that are probably closer to the sizes of safeties, and using this power running game with this pull scheme to go against those type of fronts?
Well, it makes me feel pretty optimistic about going against Big 12 defenses, for sure. With the scheme that we have for running, it enables us to probe and find weaknesses and exploit it. And we have running backs who are tough runners, who do a little bit change of pace depending on who's out there, but the opportunities are going to be out there to have a solid running game, I think, against any defense that we're going to face in conference. You know, the other thing that I don't know how much anybody really buys into this, but, you know, you really had the feel that Mississippi State really represents an SEC-type defense, I think, and their offense as well, too. K-State's kind of built that way now, too, with the variety of the run and pass that they have, and their approach to the running game against those defensive lines. So I'm pretty optimistic now as we get ready for conference play.
Yep, so am I. Another thing to be optimistic about is the stable of running backs at 1.0 scholarship running backs, and now you have a lot of guys you can depend on. Gilbert, he is still the main back, 17 carries, 59 yards, long of 11. Tons of yards after contact. I got to give credit to Grant. He's calling him the Yak on Twitter. I think that works out well. No real big mistakes. Jordan Brown continues to have that big play potential. He had 5 carries, 41 yards, 1 touchdown. He didn't get any receptions, which we've come to know and love from his game in the first two. He did have that very bad muffed punt that we might talk about in the special teams area. Like I said, no receptions. Trotter had 5 carries for 25 yards, still ran very hard. So the first question I'm going to ask before I circle back to the other two, do you think Harry Trotter still deserves to be in the rotation? Do you like rotating through 3 backs, or do you think the bulk of the carries need to be shifted to just Jordan Brown and Mr. Gilbert?
Well, I like it. It feels natural. It feels like all 3 are getting a fair shot. I do believe we may reach a time during the conference play where it will shift primarily to Gilbert and Brown. And I don't know if that's going to be because of who's got the hot hand, but they're in terms of opportunities, because we have been able to produce quite a few offensive plays, there seems to be enough plays right now to go to 3 running backs. And all 3 have been effective. And I think they're able to do well in pass protection, and they can be effective pass catchers as well.
Yeah, I think the best part about going 3 running backs is you're not going to run any of them into the ground. You're going to keep them fresh. I actually would like to see Jarcadia Wright become that number 3 back. Nothing against Harry Trotter. I just think that he brings, you know, a little bit more bulk, a little bit more traditional between the tackles type stuff, which I feel like that's what we're using Harry Trotter for. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not the coach. I don't see them in practice every day. So I like to see the 3 running backs keep everyone fresh. I still would like to see Brown get more touches. You know, only 5 carries. I mean, he had 41 yards. He, you know, had the longest run of the day, I think, of just under 20 yards. Mm-hmm. I won't make any bones about it. I predicted him to be the leading rusher, and currently he's behind Gilbert. So selfishly, I'd like to see him, you know, end up doing that so I can look smart in front of all my podcast friends. But
and it would be nice to get, though, the underclassmen out there, too.
That is true.
Because, you know, what's going to happen at the end of this year?
Well, you know what? I would agree with you, but the one thing is we didn't have a scholarship running back coming into this year. So I have faith that, hey, you have all these true freshmen. You have Harry Trotter, who is getting the experience. So I think whenever the time comes to insert the next guys, I think they will be able to do it.
Yep.
Is there anything else that you saw from the running backs that you want to touch on before we move on to the wide receivers?
Well, the only thing I would just say is all 3 of our running backs are just really tough, hard-nosed running backs. First contact is just like part of the play. I mean, they expect to get hit 2 and 3 times and keep driving, you know, getting 3 yards when it could be no gain. I really like that about all of our running backs.
Yep, and we'll give a shout out to Mason Barta. He played all 12 plays where there was a traditional fullback. Nick Leonard's did a lot of time in the backfield as well. I thought that both of them were good blockers. A little sad that Jackson Ng didn't see any playing time, but the one thing, and again, this is, you don't see it on the stat sheet, you don't see it in the box score, but Matt Hall on the K-State Online YouTube video or YouTube site, he had a video on the field of after the game, the celebration of the guys as they're coming off. Jackson Ng was just as pumped as anyone. You would think a true freshman who got to play in the first 2 games that folks think highly of, and you know, Coach Kleiman himself said he's taken a quantum leap from the beginning of fall camp to game prep for Mississippi State. You hear all that, you start, you know, thinking a little highly of yourself. You don't play it down, yet you're still hyped. You're jumping around like you had won, you scored the winning touchdown. I think that goes back to this new culture that is truly, you know, the stereotypical. It's not about the name on the back of the jersey. It's about the name on the front. And that it's really good to see a true freshman truly buy into that.
I agree. And I think it also is a culture where everybody contributes to the success and everybody owns when there's adversity or problems, or hopefully not a loss, but if there is a loss, everybody owns that too.
I think we're just honestly going to, you know, win every game from here until the end of time. So I don't think we're ever going to lose again.
So Kleiman's going to basically continue his winning streak well past this season.
Yep, until, you know, Congress bans football like 10 years from now. We'll get into the wide receivers. Dalton Schoen, he ended up leading everyone. 3 reception, 50 yards, the game-winning touchdown. Had some big catches, had some big drops. Nick Leonard's 1 for 24. Again, another disappointing drop, but they went back to him on a big third down, and he made the catch, 24 yards. Landry Weber, another guy, only one target, made a massive catch, 23 yards. Malik Knowles, 1 for 12. I still consider him the number one receiver. Got 2 carries, 12 yards on sweep plays. Wykeen Gill, 2 receptions, 5 yards. Phillip Brooks, 2 receptions, 5 yards. So in that game, you're not going to be passing a lot. We were able to run the ball. It was a shortened game. You know, we had 3 possessions taken away by special teams and defensive turnovers. So you don't even get as many plays as you typically get in this game. So I think the wide receivers at a statistical point were the most hurt by that. But what did you see out of the guys, the good, bad, and ugly?
Well, first I'm going to go back to Skyler and his ability to find the open receiver, to go through progressions and to find who is the guy that's open on this play. He's not just going to focus on one, given the number of targets that all those receivers had. The good, I go back to that Leonard's reception. It was a very well thrown ball, and Leonard's was kind of in between defenders at that time, but he looked it into his hands. I think I was most excited for any reception for the whole game was for that. I jumped up, was giving mom high fives, and I was like, Leonard's, he caught that. That was a big time third down reception. So I was very happy about that. You know, our veteran receivers, I don't like to see drops. It continues to happen a little bit, but overall, I thought it was a solid performance given the number of attempts.
Yep. Before I get into the bad, Dalton Schoen's route on that game-winning touchdown catch, you know, it was a perfect play-action kind of rollout. He was able to just get past the defense, looked into his hands, caught it, scored a touchdown. That's great. Had some really bad drops. Again, right after the Daniel Green fumble recovery on like the very next play, we had a running play where he kind of fell asleep on his blocking assignments, and that could have been a touchdown that very first play. But I do want to turn around then and say Joshua Youngblood, the true freshman, no targets, and I think he still only has 1 catch on the year, and I think that's disappointing for a lot of folks. He was hyped up by the media, by the coaching staff. Everyone thought he was going to be this game-breaking speed demon. Well, this kid is a hard-nosed football player who's out there, you know, just as much as almost any wide receiver, not getting targets, but he's downfield blocking. Mm-hmm. He's getting in dudes' faces. He's, you know, the whole dog mentality identity that, you know, the defense tries to take on. I think Joshua Youngblood has it because I can't think of a time where you have a true freshman who's kind of an undersized, you know, speed demon type guy who has been as good of a blocker as that.
I think he is bought in. And again, understanding what those contributions of downfield blocking can do for a big chunk or a big play that could turn into a touchdown sometimes. Those are the kind of doggedness in blocking downfield that can spring somebody on for a big play or a touchdown.
Yeah, and he's another dude who just seems to be having fun. I don't know if you remember the clip. It was after one of the touchdowns. Him, Malik Knowles, and John Holcomb were dancing up on the benches, having a great time. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, prototypical. I mean, they'd be still running stairs if Bill Snyder was still around. I mean, you couldn't be doing that last year, but now it's just a culture of seeing 3 young guys, 3 freshmen, none of which are superstars yet, but I think all 3 have the potential, just having fun, cheering on their team, and it's just a fun thing to see guys so bought into their teammate success because they know at the end of the day that's what's going to bring the team the most success.
Yep, the exuberance is catching, I think.
Yep, so again, before we wrap things up on the offense, when it comes to the wide receivers, they're my biggest question mark on the team. It's not as big of a deal as if our old buddy Seth Luttrell, if he would have been the head coach here, I think that'd be a much bigger deal. He's a spread it out, you know, throw it 50 times a game. That's not what this team is. Do you have enough faith in these guys that their drops and some of their mental mistakes won't cost the team down the road in Big 12 play? Do you see them improving, or do you think this might be something that ultimately may bite us before the season ends?
Yeah, I have a little bit of concern about that very thing. There could be some games in the future in conference when we're going to need to throw the ball more than what we are. If we can always be in the lead, or within one score, you know, we don't necessarily have to leave our game plan. But if we have to get down 10, 14, 17 points early in the second half and we have to really throw the ball to actually move the ball down the field quicker and make some quick scores, we're going to rely on our receivers to make big plays. And, you know, that could be a concern.
All right. Any final thoughts on the offense? Again, they got 24 points amongst them. We had the big return to get us to 31. Any final call-outs on the offense before we move on to the defense?
I think overall, I guess we're probably grading out a little. Have we already... We're not really grading out the offense, but if I were, I would have to give them a solid A-, I think, given the circumstances of the game, being on the road at an SEC opponent. I felt like they performed quite well, but I think the person holding the flagpole, that would be Skylar Thompson, he did great.
Yep, it was fun to watch a game where anytime you got the ball, it's been a while since I felt like this. Anytime we've gotten the ball, I thought to myself, all right, we easily could march down the field and score. And if it was even a 3rd and 8 or longer, I wasn't mailing it in already thinking about a punt like I had been the last couple of years. Because despite my worries about the pass catchers on this team, Skyler's able to make plays, and we made a couple of those deep third down conversions. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they show coming out of the bye week for Oklahoma State here in a couple weeks.
And in defense of the receivers as well, there always seems to be somebody, he can find the open person.
Which didn't happen a year ago.
Right.
So the improvement is there. Now let's talk about the defense. We're going to start with the defensive line. I think the biggest jump from last year to this year, I mean, there were times versus Mississippi State last year where you would have defensive linemen who ended up on the sidelines. They got dominated so bad. Wyatt Huber ended up being held out, very precautionary with him. I don't think you want to take chances in the third game of the year with concussions. He's a Topeka cat. When it came out that he wasn't going to play, how worried were you?
I was quite worried because I felt like that maybe for each game that I had seen, he had been maybe our most dominant and impactful defensive lineman. So without him going against Mississippi State, I was afraid that our defensive line may not measure up.
Yep, but they had an outstanding performance. They were consistently getting penetration, quarterback pressures, two sacks on the day, Trey Deshaun, Kyle Ball. We had 3 quarterback hurries. Jordan Mitty, 7 tackles, 1 tackle for a loss. Kyle Ball, 8 tackles, tackle and a half for loss. Trey Deshaun, 2 tackles, 1 sack, 1 tackle for loss. Reggie Walker got 2 tackles back there. They're playing in Mississippi State's side of the line of scrimmage almost every play, and it really allowed the linebackers to shine, which truly is what a defensive lineman's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Take care of those blocks and let the linebackers clean up. I was, quite frankly, almost shocked of how well they played.
Yeah, they were creating havoc, you know, throughout the whole game, getting penetration, tackles for loss. You know, their running back Hill, I thought, even though he did get over 100 yards, I thought those were probably the toughest 100 yards he probably ever had in one game. I mean, he got hit a lot. And then also flushing out the quarterback, especially the freshman quarterback who came in the second half. He was more of a runner, but boy, we flushed him out and created havoc for him, created problems for him, you know, all day.
Yep, I tell you what, Mitty maybe had the top defensive performance of the game. He was constantly back there, and it's good to see him. It's his senior season, and just, you know, truly coming into his own after what I thought probably was an underrated junior season last year. Him and Trey Deshaun up in the middle, I mean, they might be fulfilling the prophecy Reggie Walker said as being the best defensive line in the Big 12.
I mean, they have certainly made a case for that.
So I touched on it earlier, because of how great that defensive line played, it allowed the linebackers to truly shine. Daquan Patton was all over the field, 8 tackles. Eli Sullivan, 6 tackles. He had the big hit on that helicopter play. You know, A.J. Parker propped him up, and Sullivan came in and finished him off, and that's going to be a hit that you see on the hype video before the game for the next 20 years. A lot of people were drawing comparisons between this game and the 2011 game versus Miami. If you're going to make that comparison, that's like the Trey Walker stop at the goal line, you know, stop him a yard short from picking up a first down driving, trying to win the game. So he made that big play. One of my favorite guys, Daniel Green, 7 tackles. He was the one who was in the right place at the right time to pick up that fumble. And overall, these guys swarmed with speed. They were filling the gaps. They disrupted Hill. They were in the backfield on passes. Was this the best linebacker performance we've seen probably, what, since Arthur Brown was roaming?
I was just about to say that. I felt like that for the whole linebacking group, if you look at that performance, their tackle numbers, as hard as they were hitting, and cleaning up right after the great performance of the defensive line. You look at that, the line and the linebacker group together, it's maybe one of the best performances I can think of. Maybe the Brown era is right.
Yeah, and they're playing with swagger, and when they come to hit, they aren't just giving you a hug. They're hitting with venom, which is something you want to see from the linebackers in this brand of defense they're playing. As Van Malone calls it, the mob mentality defense. Almost every time a play was ending, you saw 6 to 7 white shirts swarming around them. And Mississippi State fans were trying to call our linebackers thuggish, which kind of I don't see it, because I thought everything they did was within the rules of the game. There was a late hit that we're about to talk about by the secondary, but when it comes to the linebackers, that's the prototypical type of linebacker play you want to see in football in 2019.
Well, it was a mob approach to swarming the ball carrier. There were some really, really hard hits, but man, we're tackling too. I mean, we're bringing them down. Now, Hill drug a few people along and got lots of extra yards.
But he's a quality back.
He is. He's going to play on Sundays, I think.
Yes, he is.
Just one mention about Mississippi State. I think they were trying to goad us into a lot of extracurricular stuff to get flags on, unsportsmanlike penalties, unnecessary roughness, those kind of things. I think they were really trying to goad us into that, and we did get caught up in that a little bit. But you talk about thugs. I mean, that was a whole group of thugs.
Yeah, and again, I don't like throwing that word around, because that I think has a connotation that's outside of football. Football's a physical game, but Mississippi State, they were the ones who instigated a lot of the jawing. So I think some of their Twitter fans need to pipe down and take their L. Down in Mississippi and, just sit in their unair-conditioned, houses, because they're a bunch of hicks. We'll move on to the secondary. We were able to hold their passing tack to 11 of 27. A lot of that had to do with the pressure from the defensive line and the linebackers, but only giving up 151 yards through the air, truly making them do it on the run. Only giving up that long touchdown at the end of the half, which wasn't a great look. But, it is what it is. But they made some great plays on the ball. They picked off Stevens twice. Denzel Goolsby, 11 tackles, 1 interception. Jerron McPherson, talk about a dude who likes to hit hard. That guy, very early in the game, had a tackle for a loss. And I think he should have been credited for a second one. I think it might have been a no game, but that's when their true freshman tried to make a little bit of, chicken salad out of chicken shit. He tried to do that lateral, and McPherson just lit him up. Another hit that's going to be on the hype video the next time K-State plays at home versus Baylor on Fort Riley Day.
I kind of credit that receiver for hanging on to the ball.
Yes. Credit where credit's due. That was a good move by him, but I think that was his best game in the first three. AJ Parker, he had 4 tackles. I think he was good in pass defense. He had the interception, but let's talk about real quick. When you're a defensive player with the ball, yes, he got lit up pretty hard by a 312-pound offensive lineman, but you have to protect the ball. That interception and subsequent fumble, that's when I was feeling at the lowest. I thought momentum there, I was afraid, wasn't ever going to swing back to K-State.
It was maybe the biggest momentum flip in one play that happened the whole game. At least it felt like it at the time. And I agree. I think they you've got to wrap up. You can't just give it right back and flip the momentum you just gained and give it right back to them. But I think you have a young guy that gets a big interception and he sees some green grass in front of him. I think he probably thought he might be able to take it to the house. And you just got to get down before you take that big hit. You can't risk losing the ball there.
Before we talk about Wayne Jones, great performance by Kavion McGee and Daryl Patterson, who stepped in with Walter Neal not being able to play. They made a great play on the ball before the subsequent touchdown when they threw it deep and Kavion McGee rid the guy out of bounds, wasn't even letting him make a shot at it. When you have backup corners starting and getting a lot of playing time, you always worry about it. But I thought that they played very well. And honestly, I think McGee might be pushing to be a starter because I've been less than impressed with Walter Neal so far this year.
I would agree. I like the way McGee is running around out there, and I think he has good vision. He's a good hard-nosed corner, and I think he's able to provide coverage, appropriate coverage out there. It's heartening to see backups out there performing at that level. It does give you more comfort out there to withstand some key injuries, I think.
Yep, and then also, again, real quick, the other starting safety, four-year starter, a guy who's up for multiple humanitarian awards, and I think might be contending for an all Big 12 spot, Denzel Goolsbee, 11 tackles. He got that interception off the tip ball to keep momentum going for K-State early. What was it about Goolsbee play yesterday that really made him shine?
Well, I think he's a stud, number one. And I think he's kind of the Skylar Thompson of the defense out there. I think he keeps the secondary in line. They've got their shape in the defense that's called. He's got, like Skylar, I think he's got great vision out there. And when he has the opportunity, he's a hard hitter. He's wrapping people up. He's not letting anybody get any yards after his contact. I'm a big Goolsbee fan.
All right, we have to talk about the freshman, Wayne Jones. Wayne Jones, two really bad 15-yard penalties. One was a late hit where he did not need to throw him down. It was out of bounds. The whistle had already happened. I thought he was feeling the emotion of the game early. I was okay with it. The second one, in a vacuum, I'm okay with. If it was, early in the second quarter or something like that, whatever. He's playing aggressive. Send a message to their quarterback who's been a little hurt. But you have to know the time and place if you're willing to do that. First off, you'd already gotten a 15-yard flag earlier in the game. Second off, the half is over. If you just roll away. But the guy's already slid. It wasn't a violent hit. It was just a stupid hit. He kind of looked like a fool. He got stiff-armed by Hill, just kind of got thrown to the ground, had some blown assignments. Again, he's a freshman. Mm-hmm. But talk about his game, because I think he was the low light of the game, but I think you got to remember freshman, mm-hmm. and he's still learning.
Yeah, he is, and I think the potential's there. He could be a great one, for us in the years to come. It was all about the timing on that late second quarter penalty that he had. He had had one earlier. I'm like you. It was early in the game. He was caught up in the emotions. When I saw that play, personal foul on roughing the quarterback there or on the quarterback when he slid, in real time, I thought, man, I don't think he really hit him that hard. But then when they slow it down, they have the close-up, he did hit him in the head.
Yeah, which were probably maybe lucky they didn't try to eject him.
I thought they may have done – they do targeting, right,
yeah.
in college. They could have viewed that as targeting and sent him away. But it was all about timing there because if that penalty doesn't occur, they don't score a touchdown there, and we have all the momentum in the world going into the second half, and we're receiving the ball.
Probably blow them out.
It could have been a blowout from that point on. We don't know.
Yep. Any final comments about the defense before we move on to special teams?
Well, the only thing I'd say about the secondary as well, too, is that I think there was a little bit of a commentary on the passing abilities of the quarterbacks that Mississippi State threw out there. I mean, their starter was injured. He wasn't right, all first half when he was throwing the ball. The freshman, when he came in, he's much more of a, I'm going to tuck it and run first. But having said that, we did defend the pass for the most part pretty well.
All right. Again, defense, I think, especially with how long they were out there, they had to defend five extra possessions versus Mississippi State based on how the game was played, turnovers, et cetera. I couldn't have asked for a better game. I mean, holding any opponent to 24 points, I mean, I think you take that every week for the rest of the year, wouldn't you?
I will take that. Sign me up.
Yep. So Scotty Hazleton sure is doing great on the defense. Real quick, special teams, kickoff, kicking. We talked about the decision to pooch versus deep kick. We won't rehash that. But Lynch, he hit a field goal, perfect on his extra points. No complaints here for the third-legged man, Blake Lynch.
Lynch gets a sticker on the helmet for me. I mean, I'm not assigning any game balls or anything yet. But as far as what we would expect from Lynch, he did perfect.
Yep, I agree with you. Return game, Phillip Brooks, he looked improved, but everything else on the punting, not great. Jordan Brown, Seth Porter, muff punts, that's four muff punts in 2 weeks. Are we getting to the point where it's just don't have an up man, tell Phillip Brooks to call a fair catch every punt?
Maybe. That's certainly the safe way out, and you're giving up the opportunity to have a big play. I will say, in a little bit in defense to the shaky receiving on the punt end, two of those punts were tipped. And so the trajectory was not what is expected. The rotation of the ball was probably off as well. Still no big excuse, but it wasn't like it was a clean punt in the air spiral that they were able to track from the kicker's foot all the way into their hands.
Yep, I agree. Malik Knowles, I mean, K-State gets their return touchdown of the year. What were your thoughts when he took that back? Mississippi State had just taken the lead, 7-point lead. I was spazzing out pretty hard, and then all of a sudden he takes that back, and I just had a renewed spirit.
Oh, me too. That was our biggest positive momentum swing of the whole game. When he first caught that in the end zone, it looked to me he was ready to take a knee. And when I saw the replay of that, it almost looked like maybe he was just kind of faking everybody out. Maybe he had every intention to run it out.
Well, he said in postgame that he thought it was going to go over his head. So when it started to die right under him, he was surprised he even was going to get a chance to catch it. So
I think if he would have took a knee, he might have taken it on the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
I mean, he caught it right on the goal line.
Yep. But, it was great, great blocking. He has the good vision, the good speed, and, special teams is – it'll be all right, I think.
When he caught that first hole, I said he's gone because, man, he just slowly moved away from everybody else.
Final special teams, Mr. Ankdahl, boomstick swagger, as I like to call him. Two touchbacks, one inside the 20, had a long of 61. I'll tell you what, if the coverage team was a little bit better, he could have had two punts. The two touchbacks could have been downed inside the five.
Absolutely. He is solid. The way he kicks the ball, too, almost always checks right in place when where the ball hits the turf.
I think he might be drafted. He's that good. And he can be a kickoff specialist in the NFL as well. I think any of those NFL teams that have an aging kicker who would love to just have their kicker just kick field goals and extra points, I think he would be a valuable guy because he has the leg, he can kick off, he can punt. He might win us a game or two late this year.
He might, and he has the ability to flip field position.
And that's what you want in your punters. And I'll tell you what I want in my cheese. That's Kansas milk. Go to Alma Creamery. They're sponsoring our grading of the Keys to V. They are right in Alma, Kansas, in the Flint Hills. It's only 3 miles south of I-70, exit 328. Check out their garlic cheese curds, folks. I cannot tell you enough good things about them. Make sure to check them out. We're going to grade the Keys to V. The first one, it was Grant's. It was play calm and composed. Things will get tough in this game. We need to act like we've been there before. When things get sticky, we need to attack the adversity and not crumble. What are you giving that?
Well, I'm going to give it an A- because we did exactly that. However, we did caused some of our own mistakes. I would have given it an A or an A+, given all the adversity we did face in that game, from being in a hostile environment, the weather, being finding ourselves behind and needing a drive in the fourth quarter. But I'll give it an A-.
I'm giving it a straight A. You have to have adversity to beat adversity. So I'm not going to hold the fact that we kind of screwed up a little bit against being able to play through the adversity. So I'm going to give it an A. The second one was force Mississippi State's quarterbacks to beat you, sell out to stop Kalen Hill and the Mississippi State rushing attack, force Tommy Stevens to beat you with his hurt shoulder, or force the true freshman Garrett Schrader to make plays to beat you. This might be the worst wide receiving core we see rest of the season. I'm giving it an A. Hill, again, had 111 yards, but it took him 24 carries to do it, 4.6 average. Schrader, the freshman quarterback, he maybe if he had the entire game might have had the chance to beat you. He picked up 82 yards, and then they had that one passing touchdown, and then the quarterbacks both had a rushing touchdown apiece. But you shut down their main offensive weapon, and like I said, the quarterbacks weren't able to beat you, so I can't give it anything but an A.
I give it an A- as well. I, too, like you, had the freshman quarterback, played the whole game. It would have been interesting, but he could not have withstood two helicopters, I don't think.
No, he wouldn't. I'm actually surprised he popped up as quick as he did. But yeah,
I think he needed some Tylenol this morning.
Yes, he probably did. The next one, it was Grant's forced turnovers on the road. That's a recipe to get yourself extra possessions. I'm giving it an A-. You get a fumble recovery, you get two interceptions. I'd give it an A+ if we wouldn't have turned around and fumbled one of those interception returns.
I gave it a B+. For the same reasons, but I'm just being kind of a hard butt this morning.
Yep. The final one, it was mine, protect the football. I'm giving it an F. You can't turn it over three times. And all three were major, major momentum turns. All three led to Mississippi State points. Has to be an F.
Well, I actually gave it a C-.
What the hell?
Well, probably because I think the two turnovers were within one group, the special teams, which, again, I think there were some circumstances that led to it, though they've done it before. I'm saying C-.
Well, whatever. You're much nicer than me. We're going to quickly move through the mybookie.ag promo code CHAIR, 100% deposit bonus up to $1,000. Ask Bosco questions. We're already sitting at 55 minutes, so we'll go almost rapid fire through some of these. Johnny Eppleseed, this is the most optimistic you've felt after a Cats W since when?
Well, I think it's 2014 at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think I'd probably agree with you there. That was a great one. I'd maybe almost go all the way back to 2011 Miami just because it's early in the season. You still have almost the entire season to look forward to. And that Oklahoma team ended up being like 8-4. So maybe I'm using, revisionist history on that. But I think it's either that one or the 2011 Oklahoma or maybe even 2011 Miami, maybe even 2012 Miami, just kicking their ass at home. Greg KSU 1027. Does this team make a second tier bowl? By second tier bowl, he's saying Outback, Citrus, Alamo. I think Alamo is a tier one bowl, in my opinion, because it's the first bowl outside of New Year's Six. So yeah. Do you think they can reach that Citrus Bowl or Camping World Bowl out in Orlando level?
They can. I think that means they need to get to 8 wins.
Eight or 9 wins. Do they do it? I don't think so, but if you would have asked me that at the beginning of the season, I would have said hell no. So the fact that I'm opening the door to that, I think says a lot with how they've performed.
Door is open, yes.
All right, KSU Funny 33 and Brett Morey 1 both asked this. This is the biggest win for the program since when? I mean, I think it, at Oklahoma probably is the answer.
Yeah, that's.
I don't think there's been anything since 2014 that would have been bigger.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like a non-con game against a SEC team, it's hard to top it, really. I would say that was even bigger than that Miami win.
I agree. So
at Oklahoma is always big.
Yes, that is always a big one. Powercat Ryan has a couple of them. Has there ever been a more dominant 7-point win on the road?
None come to mind.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, if you really kind of take away some of the self-inflicted mistakes, it truly was a dominating game. Mm-hmm. He's asking, where does Coach Hazleton coach next season? I think he's anticipating maybe he's...
He's going to be a Wildcat next season.
I hope so. I want to keep Coach Hazleton as long as we could. And then he says, we have an off week for climbing to push this team to cleaning up muff punts and dumb penalties. Is this a good spot for your first bye week before you start Big 12 play? I think so.
It feels like it. I when I saw it on the schedule at first, I thought, man, this is coming way too early, but it feels like it's a really good time.
Yep. Connor Schmidling asks, what would the score have been without all the turnovers? I would say Cats 90, Mississippi State 0 if we wouldn't have turned over the ball.
I would have been more like 72-7, I think.
It would have been ugly for Mississippi State if we could have held on to the ball. Mike Smith, what up, Mike? Do we crack the top 25? I'm saying yes. I say we check in at 24 in the AP and 25 in the coaches.
That sounds right to me.
Although we didn't receive any votes last week, so that would be a pretty big jump. But I'm hoping so. I'd like to be ranked again. Travis Tannehill, how many years until we win the Big 12 championship?
It's this year.
Yeah, why not? I think you're going to see us really compete for it within the next 4 to 5 years.
Right.
I truly believe that.
I think that is a fair time frame to expect true competition for the top spot.
Expert Tapic, sir. I'm not sure if that's the correct screen name, but whatever. How much are you changing your win total prediction? I said I wasn't going to come off 5 wins until the Mississippi State game. We won that. I'm officially going to check in at 7 wins now.
Well, I said 6, and I think 8 is within play. I'm going to say 7.
Well, I'll take 7 right now.
I'll tell
you that. Gleemaw21, with this win, what do you think our chances are for a marquee conference win against either UT or Oklahoma? 30%.
I was going to say 25%, but there's certainly a possibility. I mean, it gives you hope that you can compete against the very best in our conference, I believe.
Doing Work asks, how badly do we lose this with Snyder? I mean, we saw the game last year. I think their roster was a little worse than it was last year. You'd probably say ours is a little better, but it's on the road. I'd probably say we probably lose by 21 points again.
I could see us in a scenario, you know, hanging around and maybe getting late points, maybe 10.
Yeah, I think everyone knows I'm just glad that Snyder is gone. I'm glad Kleiman's here. Matt Weller 76 asks, Kleiman was the right hire, but was there more talent left with this team than initially anticipated? I think at least what I have always been saying is we have the upper end talent. I wasn't sure about the depth. So I'm not going to say that there's more here than initially anticipated. Maybe some folks on the outside would say that, but I was always saying, hey, we have the first level. We don't have the depth. And I truly don't know if I've seen enough from the depth to come off of that take.
I can't really disagree, but I think what is vastly different is scheme and culture. And with the talent that we did have, we're getting the most out of what was left over.
I agree with you. Hazen Short, what's your best and worst case scenarios now and most likely Big 12 postseason standings? I'm saying worst case scenario is still 5 wins. I could see it, you know, worst case scenario, some injuries happen, only getting 2 Big 12 wins. I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think if you're truly talking about worst and best, that's possible. In best case scenario, 10-2. I think OU and Texas are substantially better than us. I think they have good coaching staffs, but there isn't another team in the Big 12 that I don't think if we play our A game, we wouldn't beat.
I don't see us not winning 3 Big 12 games. So I think our worst case scenario now is 6. And I would agree. I think 10 could be in play. It's going to be hard to beat OU in Texas.
All right, the next one, Clayton Meyerhof. I probably pronounced your last name wrong. I'm sorry. What's the main difference? What was the main difference this offseason to get the line so much more physical? For the offensive line, I truly think it is all scheme. Defensive line, maybe just belief and confidence. There's nothing I can point to the defensive line and say this is why they're playing so much better. I think it might just be belief and confidence.
I couldn't say it any better. It's totally scheme with offensive line. That's what's different there. And these guys believe in themselves, and I think they are confident now.
Yep, the real Aaron Moreno asks, aside from stupid obvious penalties and mistakes, what can we improve on going forward? I think just being consistent catching the ball. Matt Hall is really preaching that that's the most overtalked thing amongst fans when it comes to watching football is complaining about drops. Well, I think he's correct to an extent. When you're going to be in some of these tight games, you can't have three or four of them in a game, and you really need to maximize those opportunities when you're getting open and the ball's hitting you in the hands. So that's what I would say we need to improve on.
Right, I agree with that. And I think there'll be more confidence with our receivers going forward, and I think we'll have fewer drops. And then we got to take a hard look at our punt return game.
Oh, yeah, yep, I agree with you. Logan Possum asks, going into the OU game, what record for K-State would have you most surprised? Being 6-0 or being 3-3?
Well, I would say being 3-3. I'd be more surprised at that.
Yeah, at this point, I totally agree with you. I'm not sold on Oklahoma State. I'm definitely not sold on TCU. Baylor, I think, is going to be good, but they still haven't really played anybody. So I agree. I'd be more surprised if we lost all three versus winning all three. And then the final one, and I'm sorry we couldn't get everyone's questions in here. Lots of questions came in, and we're already running long. But I wanted to get this in here because he's a great bonehead, and I've been pronouncing his Twitter handle wrong for basically since the very first Twitter Q&A. It is TCOB07, not TCOB07. So TCOB07. Is the punt return up man worth it? Any changes to your season predictions, and how long will this staff stay together? I will say the punt return up man is not worth it. Maybe I'm being reactionary to the two muffs, but you know, I've been saying all offseason, I'm still saying it, just call a fair catch every single time. Changes to the season predictions. I think I'm officially changing from 5-7 to 7-5. How long will this staff stay together? I hope at least one more year, but I think Coach Hazleton and Coach Riley both will be very hot commodities in the coaching community.
Up man on the punt receiving crew can be crucial, especially if you have like a rugby style kicker that we run into. I don't know how many of those we have in conference play. Just call a fair catch until we can figure it out. The coaching staff.
Yep. How long will they stay together?
I agree. I think one more year, and then if we continue to have success and we improve, we're gonna lose some.
Yep. All right. Those were our questions. Again, thank you, everyone. It was probably one of the most active days we've had in the Bonehead community on Twitter. Remember to use hashtag AskBosco, because if you don't use it, there's zero chance we are going to answer your question. We're going to wrap it up with presenting our Game Ball Awards. And if you want to award your game balls, go to BlueChew.com. Use promo code ARMCHAIR. It's the exact same stuff that you find in Cialis or Viagra, but it's chewable. So you can get hard basically in up to two and a half times faster. Guys, it's great. Blue like the color, chew.com. Only $5 for shipping. Use promo code ARMCHAIR. Blue Chew, Blue Chew, Blue Chew, Blue Chew.
It's so comfortable to have that conversation here.
Oh, yeah. 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 Imagine having to do that ad read across from your dad. And we made a lot of Blue Chew jokes at the wedding last night.
Yeah, there were some great ones.
Yep, definitely. Shout out to our friends over at Ain't No Seats Pod, who also, they don't need any Blue Chew because KU got that win versus Boston College. Also want to take this time to say the ACC is trash, but game ball time. You guys know how it works. We both award two game balls and the swagger sticker. No player can receive two game balls, but he can receive a game ball and swagger sticker. Traditionally, it goes one offense, one defense, and whatever you want for the sticker. But you can always substitute in some special teams love in any of your awards. Dad, you kick it off first. Who is getting your first game ball?
My first game ball is going on the offensive side of the ball, goes to Skylar Thompson for his leadership and his ability to get in and out of the right plays and find the right receiver.
Yep. Skylar, I think, has gotten an award every single game so far. And if this season goes the way we expected, I don't think that's going to change. My first game ball is going to Malik Knowles, the greatest Knowles of all time. That kickoff return for a touchdown, it probably saved the game. And he was very good on those jet sweeps. He made a big catch. The guy is going to be a stud again because he was able to keep his red shirt. We have him all of this season and still three more seasons after that. I think when it's all said and done, Malik Knowles will be considered one of the greatest wide receivers we've had. The stats might not be there because of the way this offense plays, but he has so many big plays ahead of him in his time at K-State. Dad, who's getting your second game ball?
My second game ball goes to Denzel Goolsbee, the quarterback of the defense. He is a stud. He has great vision. I think his football IQ is up there with the best of them.
My second one is going to Daquan Patton. The dude was a madman who was making hits, who was making plays. He's exactly what you needed yesterday in a linebacker. I want to give a shout out to Mr. Jordan Mitty for an honorable mention. Again, maybe one of the better interior defensive line games we've had outside of the Ty Geary era. Will Geary. Sorry. Ty's his brother.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Shout out to Ty as well. Yeah. But no, since the Will Geary era, haven't seen interior defensive line play like that for a few years now. So he had a great game. But it is going to Daquan Patton. Dad, who is getting your swagger sticker?
Swagger sticker goes to Malik Knowles for all the reasons that you stated. And plus, on the sideline after that that touchdown, it was great to see how happy he was and celebrating with his teammates.
Yep, that's a great one. And mine is going to go to Mr. Green. I tell you what, he is right place, right time. And he every time he gets the ball in his hand, he's looking to score. One of these days, he's going to either get an interception or a fumble recovery, and he's going to take it to the house. Daniel Green gets my swagger sticker because when he hits hard. He dances a little bit. He's going to jaw a little bit. And he's just walking with the swagger. So he gets it. And another one who has 3 years in front of him. And again, another guy who I think we're going to love seeing play for, you know, years to come. So that wraps up our Mississippi State review. What a fun game it was. We're going to have the next three episodes with no games coming. I think we're going to have some fun interviews, some fun guests. It's been a really long time since it's been this much fun to be a K-State Wildcat football fan. So I want to thank the Boneheads for riding with us. I want to thank you, Dad, for stepping in, co-hosting this review episode. And I tell you what, so much better than that West Virginia game review we did last year.
Oh yeah, we're both smiling. It was a good time. We had to scratch for content at that last review.
Yes, it was. So I want to tell all the Boneheads, we love you guys. Thank you again for all your support, all the fun we're having. And Dad, I will let you drop Grant's favorite catchphrase.
Well, if you're looking for Grant, you can meet him at the Cathead.
And they stay there, and they say yeah, and they stay there. Cause all I do is win, win, win. And if you going in, put your hands in the air, make them stay there.
Ludacris going in on the verse, cause I've never been defeated and I won't stop now. Keep your hands up, get them in the sky for the homies that ain't making it, my folks locked down. I never went nowhere, but they saying Luda's back. Blame it on that contour, the hood call it Luda Yak. And I'm on this foolish track, so I spit my foolish flow. My hands go up and down, like strippers' booties go. My verses still be serving, tight like a million virgins. Last time on a college remix, now I'm on the original version. Can't never count me out, y'all better count me in. Got 20 bank accounts, accountants count me in. Make millions every year, the South's champion. Cause all I do, all I do
is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
Head on a swivel, you know serving me's a no-no. Clean as a whistle as I pull out in my Rolls Royce. Yellow bone passenger, they see it, they say, oh boy. Del Kelly, back it up, my niggas call me Loco. Down for armed trafficking, don't make me pull that fofo. Ask you what you laughing at, represent that mud life. Dirty money, bitch, you better get your mug right. We come
come together, holding hands and holler good life. We all strapping all black, it's like Bud Light.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
Kitchen, pot on the stove, water getting boiled, dope being sold, Snoopy in the hookie, system overload. I've been running this rap game since I was 20 years old. I hung with the worst of them, bust till I burst them up, floss them up, toss them up, hard away, cross them up. Pardon me, I'm bossing up, pressure up, bless you, bro, don't mess with us. We like the U in the 80s. Back to back, set a track. Hit the lick, get it back. Get the trick, jump the track. Bitch, I want my money back. Time and time again, while I'm sipping on this gin. Al Davis said it best, just win, baby, win.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
Podcast Network.